Now, what would be the odds that that was happening again, that that was a new report? Was that a new report or an old report? That's what I'm asking. Is it a new report or an old report? Is that a new report? Well, we don't know.
When a seasoned sports fan teams up with a millennial, opinions may vary, but the debates assuredly won't disappoint. Check your sources. It's New Report, Old Report.
Here's your hosts, John Lund and Al Renato.
Well, Al, another exciting week in athletics. March Madness is heating up as we enter into the second and potentially for some best weekend. Nothing circles the wagons quite like the National Football League, as some fan bases get excited for random pro days from potential players that their teams may or may not draft. Major League Baseball had its opening day. Hopefully you knew it was here, because Major League Baseball itself doesn't do a great job of letting you know that it's back. And we get closer and closer to figuring out the standings for the NBA postseason and where some teams may fall as far as the wild card games are concerned and the tops of some divisions. But it is the most wonderful time of the year. We missed you all last week when the madness first started. The madness continues now in somewhat of a different light. We enter into the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight weekend, with all the ones and all the twos making it to that stage, something that's only happened a handful of times. Folks love their upsets. Folks love to see the underdog, the Cinderella story. This time, not so much. An underdog is coming from the Atlantic Coast Conference, if you will. A team that won the ACC tournament is probably the closest you'll get to it. And second, another team from the ACC in what some pundits called a top-heavy league. Well, how top-heavy can it be after what happened on Thursday night? But we get to this stage with all the good teams mostly still alive. We did see, and we'll talk about, number two Arizona be the first of such to fall, as Clemson upset them in the first game of the Thursday nighters. But overall, as we're talking, the good seeds are still alive. Things, of course, can change, but it's a different view than it has been over the last several years, where you have those underdog stories take over in some instances, and sometimes they even get to the Final Four. We haven't seen one of those teams win, of course, since back in the Jim Valvano days. But what is your viewpoint, Al, on a tournament like this, where you end up with just about chalk for the ones and twos, mostly good news for threes and fours, and finally a year where you can say, well, the better teams are there. We're going to get incredible matchups because of it. This is what a lot of people want. They don't necessarily want their Cinderellas going too far, because it usually ends up in heartbreak. They'd rather see the stout competition, and we most definitely got that this go around, with everybody seemingly off to a great start, getting past that first weekend, aside from the likes of, say, Kentucky and Baylor and Auburn.
Basically, the SEC. But first of all, it's great to be back with you, Big John, and all our fans and friends. Tournament time, everybody loves March Madness, best event in all of sports. And everybody loves those first 2 days. And I do as well. But I analogize it to everybody loving that first round of the NFL playoffs. Can't wait. It's finally here. But the best week of the NFL playoffs is the following week, where you've cleared out the crap. Okay. Those teams that got in at, you know, 8-9, 9-8, whatever the case may be, who have no business being playoff teams. And with respect to the tournament, I don't want to call them the same type of teams, that, you know, because a lot of the teams that we're talking about are, what is the tournament? Their conference tournament. And you win your conference tournament, I don't care, you deserve to get in. Okay, that's always been the case. That should always be the case. And I hope that always is the case. But we did get rid of the crap like Kentucky. Excuse me, pardon my French. Virginia, which had no business being in this tournament. A total and complete disgrace that they were in the tournament. You should never have been selected as an at-large. Hideous, awful. And their performance was an absolute embarrassment, a train wreck. Kentucky didn't play poorly. They just got outplayed by an upstart Oakland team. But I love the Sweet 16 because most of those teams are gone. And as you said, people tend to love the upset. But as we talk about time and time and time again, those upsets can also ruin the tournament in the long run. Because do you really want to see one of those teams go to the Elite Eight and knock off one of the better teams in the country early on and eliminate the possibility of a great matchup in either the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight? So this year we had our share. We had a few, obviously with Kentucky going down, with Auburn going down to Yale, which was a huge upset. And obviously, anytime Bruce Pearl loses, we love it because we know Bruce Pearl is, in fact, a snitch and a gutless snitch and a cheater and, you know, at the top of my war criminal list. So I have no problem with Bruce Pearl losing.
Have you enjoyed him being on the CBS desk tonight as one of the pundits now, one of the analysts, Bruce Pearl? Right next to Seth Davis. Hooray.
On top of everything else, he is as homely as the day is long. But more importantly, we've got a good mix. We've got most of the high seeds. We had the couple, of upsets that were eliminated after their first round win, in Yale and Oakland. But we still have Clemson alive. Not that they're a huge dog, but they knock off Arizona tonight. And a Clemson team that's been a good team all year and is playing great right now and plays a great brand of basketball to watch because they have a really good big guy. They have good guards. They have excellent ball distribution. And tonight they were just the better team than Arizona. They were the smarter team. They were the better team from beginning to end, and they deserve to win that game. Plain and simple. They were the better team from the opening tap. They got caught for a very short time where Arizona took a quick lead, but they took the lead back, took control of the game, and my old buddy, Joe Girard, in his 17th year after 4 years at Syracuse, transfers down to Clemson, and lo and behold, he's in the Elite Eight. And Clemson is in the Elite Eight for the first time since Larry Nance Sr. in my senior year at Syracuse, 1980, when they lost to Larry Brown and the four freshmen in the Elite Eight. Larry Brown's team then went on and won the national title. Went on to the national title game and lost to Denny Crum's Louisville club in the finals. That was the UCLA team with the four freshmen, Rod Rocket Foster, Michael Holton, Darren Day, and Greg Sanders. Put up a good fight, but that was Louisville with Dr. Duncan Stein and company that won Denny Crum's first national title, which was followed up by a second national title with Never Nervous Purvis Allison. So you like to have a little bit of the upsets. And the other thing is you love it when the upsets are nail biters, which is what they were. I mean, obviously the Yale Auburn game was an absolute thriller. I thought it was the most thrilling game of the tournament. And the Kentucky Oakland game was a barn burner, back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. Just when you thought Kentucky was going to come back and take over, Oakland kept fighting them off. They'd make a big three, up one, down the stretch. Kentucky plays great defense. And then the lefty in the corner launches a deep, deep three that comes down wet, nothing but net, net your ball game. 4-point lead. And they're calling for John Calipari's head in Lexington. He has survived, folks, despite all the talk of John Calipari either being fired or walking away with a $33 million buyout, we might add. John Calipari will be back next year. But the question will be, what will they change at Kentucky? Will we see John Calipari go into the portal a little more to get some older players, more experienced players? Because he loves to make the excuse that his team is too young. When I watch Kentucky play, I believe Kentucky has gotten away from what made John Calipari's teams dominant, which were size, depth, and defense. They wore you down with their size. And they just hammered the boards. They destroyed teams on the glass on both sides, of the ball, offensively and defensively. They wore teams out with their depth. They tired teams out with their size and their strength and their depth. And now, despite the fact that they have wonderful players, my favorite player in the country, and Reed Sheppard, who I talked up and pulled up a total stinker in that loss to Oakland after I talked him up and jinxed him, they don't seem to take advantage anymore of their size and strength. They are playing the three game. And I understand everybody plays it, but remember, the three is the great equalizer. It allows maybe the team that's not as deep or not as big to stay in games and play with bigger, more physical, more athletic teams, because obviously, you know, the three ball is worth one more point than the layup or the dunk. And they shoot a lot of threes. And I think by doing that, they really bring themselves down to the team that they're playing in terms of the size and the strength and the athleticism. I hate to use the term lower themselves, but they take away the advantages that they've had for so long by shooting threes the same way everybody else does. Shoot them when you're open, shoot them when they're there. But so many times their half-court offense is, you know, dribble, 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 take a three. Where's the Kentucky offense where it goes down low, inside out, take advantage of your size, and hammer the glass and defend? They don't defend anymore. Oakland scored at will against them. No inside presence, no ball stoppers. It was an embarrassing performance defensively by Kentucky. I really think they need to get back to what they used to do, because if you're going to recruit the top flight athletes, the top flight players with size and with strength, you have to take advantage of that. Now, maybe the excuse is they're too young, AAU ball, this is what they're all doing, nobody plays that way anymore. Well, you coach them to play that way. That's part of coaching. It's coaching and development. It's hard when they're one and done. Well, maybe you get them to stay. Maybe you go into the portal and you get some older guys who are a little more developed, because that's part and parcel. You have to be able to, you know, coach and teach, and guys have to be able to learn and get better. You can't just shoot threes. No matter how good you are, no matter how athletic you are, no matter how great you are off the dribble, that doesn't win championships. You know, and the advantage that Kentucky had with that size and with that strength is never taken advantage of anymore. They don't live in the painted area. They don't take advantage of what used to be the Kentucky dominance. Inside, on both sides of the ball. It just doesn't happen. But the fact that they're gone, we've survived. The fact that Auburn's gone, we've survived. The fact that Arizona lost tonight, I'll absolutely survive. Because to me, you know, Arizona, the best way I could describe them is they're all glitz and no guts. And that was a perfect example tonight. You know, when it came crunch time, they came back, but it wasn't any of their big-time players that came back. It's a kid off the bench. They never seem to get it done in a big spot, no matter how much talent they have. And tonight, Clemson just played harder. They played better. They were the better team, and they deserved to win. And they were coached better. They were better fundamentally. And I was very happy that they won that game. And I like where the tournament is right now. I really do. UConn just continues to basically obliterate people. It really is phenomenal what they have accomplished, not just in terms of – because when you watch UConn, you're like, where's the great player? Where's that super-duper guy? Where's their stud? Richard Hamilton's not there. You know, all the guys that made the there's no dominant player that brings them to the promised land. It's this almost nameless bunch. I know they had one really good player who went to the NBA last year, but you watch them play and they literally wear teams down with their defense. They get good shots, but sometimes you wonder how they get any shots. You know, they don't have a guy who breaks you down tremendously off the dribble. They don't have, this knockdown, drag out, never miss shooter. Yeah, they got a big guy, but he's not a really dominant big guy. And they just are relentless. They literally play the way he coaches. They never get tired. They never stop. They never stop working the same way. Coach Hurley never shuts up.
We're in a spot with UConn where you could jokingly say they haven't really beaten anybody good yet and kind of slap your knee, but then also look at the scores in which they've beaten the teams that they did last year and now this year. They're beating teams by 13-plus points every time they have these games.
Wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what the thing is, we're watching the same game. It's the same game over and over. It's 5, it's 7, it's 10, it's back to 5, it's 15. It's 25. Good night, nurse.
And Dan Hurley's relishing in it. He's joking about
Dan Hurley's screaming at somebody.
Yeah. And his wife is washing his dragon underwear and outfit that he's now worn for going halfway through a second tournament in a row. Wears the same clothes.
He's screaming at his players. He's screaming at the referees. He's screaming at the fans. He's looking at his father. You know, and it's the same. They're incredibly consistent. Incredibly consistent. The same thing over and over and over and over and over. It's remarkable. It really is. I mean, who do you look at the UConn team and say, there's the first team All-American. There's the lottery pick. Boy, look at those two guys. How about that triumvirate? It's just a bunch of guys. It's a guy who comes in from the portal. It's a couple guys back from last year. It's the big guy. They are so a reflection of their coach. You know, he coached the same way at Seton Hall. You know, he never shut up. He never stopped screaming. You know, he's become a better coach over time, and he's gotten better caliber of player, and they're relentless. They're relentless. But, you know, the 10-year NBA player, is he anywhere to be found on these teams?
Well, and it's funny for the common fan. They're not going to see those guys because they're not watching UConn yet. Why would you turn on that game? They're blowing these teams out of the water. Similar to last year, you watched the Final Four National Championship going, who are these guys? Like you said, there's no Kemba Walker that's carrying this team.
There's no Kemba Walker. There's no Ray Allen. All right. There's no Richard Hamilton. There's just these guys.
Which is fine. And I think more teams should look at what they're doing. Because you go after these transfer guys, these one-and-done folks on both sides, and you think maybe this will be the solution. And very rarely does it end up being. Old teams end up winning in this tournament all the time.
They'll go through a few minutes where they don't score. But on the other end, it is so hard to score against them. They defend and they rebound and they defend and they defend and they defend. And they are so fundamentally sound on the defensive end of the court. And that's work. That's coaching. That's getting your players to buy into the hardest part of the game. Anybody can play offense. You're always going forward. Defense is hard. You're either going backwards or you're running around through screens, you're chasing your guy all over the court who's moving without the ball. All right. You got to work hard in the low post. You got to find your guy and box out. You always got to make sure you're aware of where your guy is, even if the ball's on the other side of the court. You can't fall asleep on the weak side. You know, ball you, man. All right. Peripheral vision. You know where your teammates are in terms of help. Know who needs help. Know who doesn't. Know to who help on and not help on. All right. Know to not go help and leave a three-point shoot. How many times do we say, guys, go help when it's not needed, or half help, get caught in no man's land and leave the three-point shooter? You know, UConn is so fundamentally sound on the defensive end. You just don't see defensive breakdowns. Once in a while, you see the 5-7 point run because they haven't scored for a while. But then the next thing you know, comes a 12-2 run and you're up shit's creek. They're just, it's almost hard to figure how they're doing it, but it's remarkable that they're doing it, and they're doing it game after game after game after game, as you said.
And for the teams that lost early, it's not so much shocking that they lost. People did have Kentucky potentially winning, Arizona tonight potentially winning, Auburn potentially winning, even Baylor winning, because we've seen those teams just get so hot offensively that any of their faults just get completely ignored because they just shoot the lights out and move on. But when you have a night where we find out who Jack Cokie is and he just hits every three imaginable and you can't stop it, nor can your offense figure out a zone, your night's over. Your run's done. If you're a team like Baylor, who's supposed to have a great offense and you can't shoot for the first three quarters of the game, you're going to lose a game to Clemson, who also then went on to beat Arizona. If you're a team like Auburn with our buddy Bruce Pearl at the helm and you don't play a good basketball game, your season is over. To Yale, because you can't make any fucking free throws at the end of the game.
The snitch.
It's your fault. It's your fault in all of those instances. So, yes, it's surprising that they lost when they did. I think a lot of us, if it's going the way this chalk is going, they would have lost anyway at some point. It's just jarring the way it happened in those first games, but such is the way of the NCAA tournament. That's what happens when you don't have it.
And that's what you do. You do want some of it. Like we said earlier, you just don't want it to be dominant.
And the upsets we've had, even still going now, are coming from not the like, who is St. Peter's? But you look at NC State, for example. They're a really good basketball team. They've got 3-4 guys that are good basketball players. It's not, who are these dudes? It's why did they lose the games that they did before this?
The same with Clemson.
Yeah.
Clemson's a really good, versatile. I love watching them play since they've got a great mix. They've got an excellent backcourt, two seniors. They've got, I think Hall is the most underrated big man in the country. I love the way he plays. I think he'll be a really good pro. I love watching him play. You know, they got the chef who looks, you know, like he's got no, again, the guy who looks in the Sunday Rec League. All right. Great line tonight from Jimmy Jackson. He wears number 4 and he goes, he's putting a lot of pressure on that number 4 jersey. It's a classic line. And he and Hall work incredibly well together. They got a lot of experience. They've been around forever. And they're incredibly well coached. He's a really good coach. Clemson head coach is a really good guy. I watch him all year in the ACC. I watch a lot of their games, obviously, being a Syracuse alum. He's a really good coach. A lot of people, fans around the country don't know about him, but he really does an excellent job game in, game out. And that's a really solid team. They play really, really well.
Some teams and leagues are just built for this tournament. They may not be built to win the whole thing, but in certain years, they can be built to just make a run when it counts. Play the right basketball you need to just survive in events of these things. We've seen it with your Syracuse basketball team countless years with Jim Boeheim, where they're on the bubble for most of the season, and you blink and they're in the Final Four. What happens? They know how to win these basketball games. Clemson knows how to win basketball games. NC State's got a dude in DJ Horn that we've fallen in love with for people that didn't know who he was, because he is your back-to-the-basket, old-school blitzer of a post player that's just going to get the ball, put his head down. Oh, you want to triple team me? I know exactly who's open. And if you don't, I'm going to take my 6 dribbles. I'm going to do my move and I'm going to score over your ass. Like we're in the driveway and we're playing against our brothers. It's beautiful to see these dudes come tournament time.
He's a load.
I love it. And we have, as we're talking, we won't get to the finals of either of these games, but you have that juxtaposition that you see in the college football season where two box scores will be side by side. usually it's a Big Ten West game and any other game, it'll say, you know, same sport. And the final is 49-42 one side and 10-3 in an Iowa game on the other side. Iowa State and Illinois battling to see if anybody can sniff 30 at the end of their first half. North Carolina and Alabama head into halftime. The score is 54-46.
North Carolina, Alabama, first win to 100 wins.
The over-under in this game was 175, and I laughed thinking, it could be 85-85, and we're still not there. And it's 54-46 at half. North Carolina averages 8 threes per game. They had 8 threes with like 3 minutes left in the first half.
With their two worst shooters knocking down, I think, 4 of them.
You go from
that they back away from, and I think they had 4 or 5 between the two of them.
Just reckless abandon, no pressure, shoot it. You go from we may get the Arizona North Carolina Caleb Love rematch bowl extravaganza. Caleb Love goes 0-for-9 in their loss to what we just saw in this North Carolina.
He's still shooting.
Goodness.
He's still putting up threes.
That three-pointer from the logo against Duke that knocked Coach K out of the Final Four and college basketball will haunt me for the rest of my days. Why couldn't we have this night then?
At least he made that one.
Could have missed that night. What happened tonight? So, next time we speak, we will have 4 teams remaining. We've got a lot of ones left and a lot of twos left, as we so mentioned. NC State, Clemson, trying to play spoiler. Several teams trying to get the they can't win the big one off their backs, i.e. Purdue. How are you feeling about who you had in the Final Four, where it currently stands, and where we'll be talking next week, so speak, of college basketball?
Okay. Well, who I had in the Final Four, believe it or not, two of them are still alive. Well, more than two. But what I had for my Final Four, believe it or not, was I did have Illinois beating UConn. So I had Illinois going to the Final Four. On the bottom of the bracket, I had Baylor. So they are gone. On the other side, I have Purdue. So obviously they are still alive. But I had Kentucky. I had Illinois beating Kentucky in the finals. So in terms of what I had, the chances of it happening are impossible because, you know, obviously Kentucky is gone. How do I feel? I'm going to stick with Illinois.
You know, yeah.
Obviously they have to win tonight to get to UConn, but I like the way they play. I think they're tough enough and they can score. You got to be able to score against UConn. You know, I mean, you can't beat them if you can't score. You got to be able to put the ball in the basket. I think they can do that enough. Obviously, they'll have to play really, really well. So that I think that is going to be an excellent matchup, regardless, if they win this game tonight. And as we speak, folks, they're up 11 with 4.5 to go in the first half against Iowa State. Remember, this is a 2-3 game. Iowa State is the 2. Illinois is the 3. And on the other side, I'm rooting hard for Purdue, and they're playing Gonzaga, which should be a terrific game. You know, people picking Gonzaga losing the first round. I mean, come on, please. Gonzaga never loses the first round. So
you at least have to wait for Mark Few to get to the Sweet 16 so everybody can say how many years are in a row he's gotten to the Sweet 16. So we've done that.
I'm rooting for Purdue for the simple reason that it's Zach Edey. It's as simple as that. I'm rooting for the big guy. You know, big guys that big get made fun of a lot. You know, he's just big. He's just a mumbleluke. He's clumsy. You know, he's not any good. He has gotten so much better throughout his college career. He's going to be the 2-time player of the year. It's not just because he's 7'5". It's because he's a really good player. Is he mercurial? Of course not. Is he Victor Wembanyama? Of course not. But he's a big kid who has improved dramatically, who seems like a really nice kid. And I like Coach Painter, who has never gotten to a Final Four. And they've had so much disappointment. So between the big kid and Coach Painter, I'm rooting hard for Purdue to get to the Final Four. They will have to get to Gonzaga, and who's down there with them? Tennessee, who's Tennessee got? Tennessee's got, refresh my memory, they're playing.
Tennessee is playing Creighton.
I think Tennessee's going to win that game. I think they're going to be too strong for Creighton physically. So I think that's going to be, I think that could be a really good game also. But, and Purdue and Tennessee would be a great game. And any of those four against each other would be a really good game. But I think, I really like Tennessee to beat Creighton, despite all the issues Rick Barnes has had in this tournament over the years. I think they're just more physical, and I think they will have their way with Creighton inside. And Rick Barnes' teams are always good defensively. So I'm still sticking with Purdue down there. And on the other side, where I had Kentucky, obviously your Duke club is alive.
For now.
I really don't. They played two really good games. That is a very tough scenario to figure, because Houston literally survived and advanced. They were in massive trouble, but pulled the rabbit out of the hat against A&M. In a game that was a battle. And, you know, when A&M hits the jumper at the gun, the three at the gun, momentum in overtime, and then Houston's entire team fouled out by the time they were at the end of overtime. But they hung on for the win. But they have not looked that good in this tournament. So, you know, I thought they would, you know, be strong there, but I pick Kentucky, you know, to go. I'm not going to be shocked if Duke finds a way to get to the Final Four. I'm not going to be surprised at all now with what's left and how well they're playing. It seems like they've got some momentum, which they really haven't had for a while. It seems like they got some good stuff going. You know, that can end quickly. There's two game tournaments. I'm a little worried about Houston. Even though I like their point guard, and we talked about what a solid player he is, and he's the guy with the ball in his hands who finds a way to make the right thing happen. Even he was a little shaky in the last game. He got it done down the stretch before he fouled out. So I'm going to stick with Houston. But again, like I said, I had him going to the Final Four, so it's really not sticking with them. I had Kentucky, you're going to the Final Four there. So to me, that. I would say of all of the regionals, that's the one that I have really no real strong feelings left about it in terms of, you know, the teams, how well they're playing, you know, who I have a real strong expectation to win.
I have Houston winning the whole thing. And that came from covering a lot of the Big 12 season for work-related purposes and then just watching them in general, thinking that they're the best team on the floor from what they could do on both sides, specifically more so on the defense. What's hurt them quietly, and what people probably haven't realized because they're not glued to the TV watching Houston, is they've had some depth injuries. JoJo Tugler probably being the biggest of them. He broke his foot at some point in the season. So their depth isn't great. Of course, you can't really judge their depth when three or four guys foul out against Texas A&M. Obviously, you're going to have to start pulling dudes off the bench, which they did with one of their, like, just about grad assistants. Hey, dude, come off cold, shoot a couple free throws for us and seal this game, will you? And he hit one. Great story at the end of that game. They're not at full strength, and that has me a little bit worried just because we know how this tournament can go. If you're getting into a game where the officials are calling it tight, like the Texas A&M game, you're not going to get struck by lightning twice in a good way. That's not how the saying goes, but you get where I'm going. The unfortunate thing for Duke is I think they obviously played one of their best games of the season against Jay Madison. It's too bad that didn't happen against Houston, because if they shot like they did a couple nights ago, they would have beaten anybody they played. D defensive aside, nobody would have kept up with them. So you hope that they didn't, as they say, shoot their load against James Madison, and they're in a dogfight against the Houston defense. But as you mentioned, they've got a chip on their shoulder because the narrative last year in the tournament when they played Tennessee was they're soft. They got bullied around. Filipowski was bloodied 5 minutes into the game. They've heard that all season. You're soft. You start slow. You can't win. Okay. Let's see what happens. So they've got that chip on their shoulder. But as you also mentioned, it's a two-game tournament. So we'll see if they can get past Houston and then potentially get rewarded with NC State again for a fourth time, or here's Marquette.
What? That was my next question. See, I think Marquette was overseeded. And I know it was hard to find twos, but, and I like Marquette. I like Shaka Smart a lot. I think he's a really good coach. I just don't think there are two. To me, I watch Illinois. To me, Illinois is much more of a two than Marquette. I think whoever comes out of Duke, Houston, the one thing I do feel strongly about, by the way, in this Illinois game, Illinois is up 33-22, folks. They're four up 11, despite the fact that they're 4-for-12 from the foul line. 4-for-12. The one thing I do feel strongly about is that the Houston Duke winner, whoever it is, I believe will move on, regardless of whether it's Marquette or NC State.
I can see that.
I'm a little disappointed in what I've seen from Marquette. They have not been impressive as a two. But like I said, I think they're more, even though they're the regular season winner, I think they're more of a 3 or 4 seed type team. And we'll see how, the big guy does against your favorite player inside. That's an intriguing game to me.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, and Kolek is on the other sides. I took the bait with the team that just lost tonight in Arizona. I had them upsetting North Carolina in the Caleb Love Bowl because of what they can do getting hot offensively. Shame on me. I did take UConn to get to the championship game. I, unlike you, am rooting for the demise of Purdue again, part three, and hoping that Tennessee beats them in that one, or Creighton. Whoever wins that game is really the only hope, obviously. We would get to the Purdue Final Four. The way things have been going, though, Purdue, Houston, North Carolina, UConn in our Final Four, if that's how everything's going to play out, which wouldn't be the worst of things. Two thrilling games. And great storylines around all those teams if they were to get to a national championship. So that's where we're at. It's been a chalky sort of tournament, a lot different than in other years, and it's perfectly fine. There's no reason to scream to the heavens. This is perfectly fine. And what we usually want.
We got some upsets.
Yeah.
And we also got some great games.
Right.
Where, Houston and A&M, and obviously the thriller with Oregon and Creighton. Oregon just ran out of gas. They just flat out, Dana Altman's team, always good come tournament time, another incredibly underrated coach. They should have won the game in regulation, and they just ran out of steam, in the first, especially the second overtime. But that was a great game also. So we've had a shame, not as many buzzer beaters, but that's okay. That's okay.
No complaints thus far. The only complaints you have is like with anyone thinking that you're an NCAA college basketball bracketologist and expert and think, I can't believe XYZ happened in my bracket. Rats.
Well, the biggest mistake is thinking that you are.
The best thing we could do every year, as we always say, is just watch the games.
Like, it's fun filling it out.
It's also fun betting on them so far, because if you were hitting the favorites, you were hitting the wins. Not that we condone that on the show, especially after some things that have happened in the NBA and MLB over the past couple of weeks that may or may not be frowned upon, depending on your viewpoints. Speaking of Major League Baseball, opening day, Thursday, March 28th. Not a great start for the old MLB. We had the cold open, I guess you could say, last week where they had a game at 6 in the morning in Korea, and the West Coast fans of the teams that were playing were supposed to wake up at 3 a.m. to watch that one. And then one game was scheduled to kick off everything Thursday afternoon, got rained out the night before. Didn't even get to the ballpark. Don't even show up. We're not playing today. Just an unmitigated disaster year after year now under Rob Manfred. When back when I was in school, when you were growing up, it's a national holiday for baseball fans, opening day. Where the because games were, who was playing whom, and now it's like they don't care.
Well, you know, first of all, it was a national holiday because of a couple of things that are no longer in existence. April is when you started.
It's a good one.
April. You didn't start opposite the Sweet 16. You started during the day in Cincinnati, the first week in April, not March. It wasn't snowing. It wasn't miserable. Granted, it's only a week, but the weather has changed dramatically over time with respect to, you know, in the East. The weather here is awful this time of year. And when are they going to learn? When are they going? We can do all kinds of these magnificent things, you know, in terms of what we do with analytics and what we do with the internet, what we do with social media, and all the magnificent things we can do in science and in medicine. And we can't figure out a schedule with 10 teams in the West of each league and a team in the East that has a dome in Toronto and a team in Atlanta and two teams in Florida. We can't figure out a way to have no games in New York and no games in Philadelphia and no games where the weather fucking blows in March. Why must, you know, so you have to maybe play more away games, the Western teams, in the middle of this. So what? So what? These fucking games blow. The weather stinks. You don't want to go. They're rained out, so you can't watch. All right? And oh, by the way, let's put them on, you know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or at night opposite the Sweet 16. What the fuck are you thinking? Somebody tell me who's got half a fucking brain. Who puts these guys? And oh, by the way, since the billionaire old man's club can't give up, you know, two gates apiece and play a total of four doubleheaders during the entire season, you play four Sunday doubleheaders, you know, one a month. Well, what does that mean? That means the schedule can start next week and it'll end at the same time because you didn't give up any time. You didn't lose any time. Because instead of starting today, you start next Tuesday, and you have the four doubleheaders, and the season still ends at the same time. Sure, if we were pushing back the postseason and the season ending later. But, you know, you can't have those doubleheaders because you're going to lose a gate, and the owners will lose a few bucks, and the players might lose a few bucks. And, oh, boy, playing a doubleheader, goodness gracious, you know, that's really going to wear me out. What a fucking absolute pile of shit it is to play baseball in March in this area of the country. It's asinine. You should be on center stage. You should have a day to prepare after everybody takes a deep breath from the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. And now you're all by yourself. There's nothing. It's you on opening day Tuesday in Cincinnati, the way it used to be. And then you want to play more games, you know, later in the day and night. That's fine. But first pitch, Cincinnati, 12:10. Instead, rain out. Let's play one at 3. Let's watch the Dodgers pound my Cardinals at 4. Let's play some night games that nobody's watching because the Sweet 16 is on. You know, is anybody got half a fucking brain? Does anybody care about reestablishing the game? Does anybody care about, you know, people watching? Does anybody care about knowing that our job is to reestablish the game and give it priority for the fans to watch it, not be competing with something else. How often do you get that opportunity? You know, but leave it to baseball and leave it to the rich goddamn owners and the dumbass commissioner to not figure out a way to put your game on center stage. Because you got to start in March. Got to start in March. It's fucking ridiculous. It's a disgrace. It helps. It really ruins what used to be an incredibly important, glorious day that so many people of all ages looked forward to. Now, it's just another day.
Well, to even go farther, we know ESPN lost many years ago the rights to the NCAA tournament for the men. TBS, CBS, True TV, TNT swooped in and paid whatever it was, and they owned this tournament. Now, the women's tournament, ESPN has been able to capitalize on and certainly may have tipped the officials just a little bit when Caitlin Clark played West Virginia the other night on the center stage. So you just have baseball today to maybe bring in some more eyes. I understand one of the games was postponed. Do you know how many games were on national cable television today, Al? One game.
I can think of one.
One game. That's all? We should just have a constant cycle of games where you turn it on at noon and you don't turn it off till midnight. One game on the national channels. What are we doing to just have to figure one day out that you know is coming and you keep pushing back and pushing back to be greedy about it and you can't figure it out?
Too hard. Too many scheduling conflicts. Travel. What the fuck are you talking about? I don't want to see games rained out on opening day. The solution is easy. You play where it doesn't rain, or if it's raining, you're inside. You have the facilities. It's 1 week. It's 1 week. Let these teams that play in shitty weather open on the road. What's the problem? Who the fuck cares?
Play where everyone wants to be. Players, fans, coaches, in warmth.
Go west or go in fucking side. All right? If I can't go to the game, at least let me watch the fucking game. They're pathetic. They're pathetic. Their heads are so far up their asses. You know, can't somebody who's in marketing for the NFL and scheduling for the NFL go work for Major League Baseball? Can't they just go steal somebody from the NFL that knows how to market their product? Can't they do that?
Conversely, the National Football League saw a hole in its calendar in December and said, you know what?
Hey, the 25th's open.
Christmas is free. There's basketball for sure, but hey, why the fuck not? Let's play two games on a Wednesday.
Who gives a shit if it's another short week for the teams that played on Saturday?
Promise them
as we get ready for the playoffs.
The math for the days that they'll get off, it'll just be like playing a Thursday night game. No problem. You're going to have teams playing three games in like 12 days. They don't care. Forget about family, the Lord, none of that on Christmas Day. Sit in front of your TV and watch our damn games, will you? And we will.
Don't worry about the NBA.
Santa better be coming down a chimney with two extra TVs for the living room to watch all these fucking things.
Exactly. Exactly. One extra short week. That's all right. You'll be okay. You'll be okay. We're changing the kickoff rules. You're going to be less subject.
Wait till you see it. They'll return kickoffs.
Play another short week.
Keep the ham and the lasagnas in the oven just a little bit longer till halftime. Wait till you see our kickoff. You'll love it. My goodness, anything for a buck.
I do like, even though we have too many delays, I do like the new replay editions, because the three replay editions, folks, if you haven't heard it, they are now, is it, whether it's going to be replay or eye in the sky, you tell me. I'm not sure. But they will be willing to take another look at roughing the passer, late hits out of bounds, and intentional grounding. And those are three of the absolute most debilitating penalties in the sport, because you know two of them are automatic for 15 yards and automatic first downs. And the other one is like a sack with loss of down, you know, effectively a sack. So I am really pleased that those are going to be able to get another look from another set of eyes or replay, whatever the case may be, especially with respect to the late hits out of bounds and the roughing the passer, because we've had so many of those that have been questionable these last few years.
Three possibilities for a challenge as well. If you get the first two challenges correct, you could get a third, which I think is fair. The one that will probably cause the most hair pulling is the proposed ban of hip drop tackles. It's great that those are potentially going to be penalized, but in the moment as they happen, very difficult to pick up on with the naked eye.
Yeah. Yep.
When we're slowing it down, especially when somebody gets injured and it gets replayed three or four times, when it's slowed down like that and you could take a second and see, oh, that definitely was. If we're just doing this at the seat of our pants and there is no replay involved, it's going to be very frustrating, I think, for a lot of defenses if this starts getting called consistently. It's tough to make tackles. I don't know if anybody's ever put that down. Now, some of them are very ugly. They result in sometimes season-ending injuries. Of course, we're watching them over and over again, so we have a bias, in a sense, when we're watching them happen. But live, real-time, I don't know how they're going to be able to figure that out.
It's hard. It's hard. And a lot of the players are pissed, but you're always pissed when Mark Andrews got hurt. So
right. Now, we can do
that
those
was basically mid-week, the injury that prompted the rule
change. Yeah, it absolutely was. And we could do the midweek fines where these – you know, practice fullback call-ups happen to lower their head when they're running the football in garbage time in the fourth quarter. They get fined $12,000 in their entire paycheck for the week because they lowered their head. We're okay to do that midweek, but I guess we can't do that with a penalty like this. It has to be something that warrants a flag and the 15 yards. So that's going to be probably the most disappointing thing or frustrating thing for fans. We don't want the tackle in the game. We don't want to see Mark Andrews lose weeks upon weeks of their seasons, no question. But we'll see if it works. The replay part I do like. We're hopeful, as always, it'll be quick and done without haste. Although that is never the case in the National
Which
Football
League. Never seems to be the case. All you have to do is watch a college basketball game where the replays basically become a joke, because it just takes forever and ever and ever and ever when these officials, you know, like to show off the gun shows that they got, that they've been working out, you know, and do the roller, okay, to look at the screen. They're rolling. And then it takes them 7 minutes. The other day, which was unfathomable, they stopped the clock and then they stopped the game to go look at a three where the kid was literally 4 feet behind the line.
Yeah.
It was an NIT game, right, that I was watching. Yes, folks, there was an NIT tournament. And kid knocked down the three from 3 to 4 feet behind the line. Nobody, there was no, you know, grouping of guys around him or in front of him to block the official. It was plain as day. They stopped the clock. You know, stop the game. let's go check and see. The times that they stop it is confounding.
Yeah,
it really is. You know, earlier in the postseason tournaments, I was watching postseason conference tournament, and Kidd is at the line for a massive 1-1. He makes the first free throw, and after he makes the first free throw, they go to the desk and hold it up for, like, you know, 3 minutes before the kid takes it. I'm like, what are you doing? You can't ice the kid like that. He made the second free throw, fortunately. But I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? That's not good for you. You don't do that, you know, after he takes his first free throw. You know, if it's that important, after the free throw, if he makes it, you stop. And if after the miss, whoever gets through, you stop the clock.
Right.
No harm. You can't spend 3 minutes there and make the kid freeze up at the line. Like, is it fortunately he made it, and it didn't matter. But I'm just like, well, what goes through their head?
Right.
And then they get there, and it's like they analyze it like it's a Zapruder film. And then, you know, if the clock is 55.4 or 55.3, who the fuck cares? Okay? You know, there should be 254.2 to go instead of 253.9. What the fuck? You know, like, anybody cares in 5 seconds, 7 seconds, a second, 2 seconds? You know, but 53.9 versus 53.6, let's make sure, you know, I mean, they're ridiculous. They're absolutely ridiculous. And they'll spend 5 minutes to get it and totally kill the game. Totally kill the game.
Desperate for an eye in the sky or a shot clock for the replay review, something. Because, and as these games get more tight, especially with the quality of teams we have, we're going to be in for a lot of tight games.
As I have said for years, I've said it for years. I don't care what the sport is, baseball, football, basketball. Put me in New York, put me in the high back chair, put the screens in front of me. I'll give you an answer 30 seconds tops. 30 seconds. Boom. Done. 30 seconds. And if it takes me longer than 30 seconds, call stands.
Honestly, you need one screen for the replay and a second screen on social media, because everybody at home sees what the call is too. Come on.
Well, from that aspect of it, on my end,
within seconds, everybody's like, it's not about
my call is my call.
Let's go.
And fuck social media. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit what people say and say. Now, texting, you know when I text you.
Texting, too. It's out of bounds. It takes 10 seconds to send a text. Come on. We're all on the same page. And these coaches love it. They can't wait to run onto the court with their clipboard. The dudes bring the chairs out. Here we go. It's an extra timeout. We're going to drop everything.
We love the chairs. Love the chairs and the water bottles.
Meanwhile, one of the teams doesn't have any timeouts. They're desperate for one, and they get 3 or 4 extra because of these stupid reviews.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. Before we get out of here, give me a storyline you're looking forward to this Major League Baseball season, aside from, of course, our favorite teams. Yours, the Cardinals. Mine, the Yankees. We will be enthralled over their seasons. But is it really going to be Dodgers in the field?
No, absolutely not. What I'm very curious to see is there going to be some new blood? Last year, we did our preseason picks, and you don't remember because, I was, as usual, wrong about everything, which is normally the case. But I did have a dark horse team. And my dark horse team, not to go to the World Series, but my dark horse team to win, or I should say to go to the postseason, was Arizona. And my dark horse team this year to go to the postseason is, I'm picking Detroit to win the AL Central.
Wow.
Minnesota, defending champs. Minnesota's got very good pitching, but their lineup been great. So I'm picking Detroit. That's my dark horse squad. And if they don't win it, I think they'll be much improved. I think they'll be a team to watch. Right. And the other team I'm intrigued about is the San Diego Padres. And I say this from being a Cardinal fan. I loved Mike Schilt. I thought Mike Schilt was unceremoniously fired by the hideous John Mozeliak and the pathetic DeWitt family. But mostly John Mozeliak. And Mike Schilt is now taking over after being the bench coach there. And they had a lot of problems last year. They had a lot of problems between players and the clubhouse and the manager and effort or lack thereof. They had, I believe, possibly the lowest team ERA in Major League Baseball and did not make the postseason. Now, obviously, they lost a lot. You know, they lost Snell, they lost Hader, they lost Soto. But they made some nice signings. And then at the 11th hour, they traded for Dylan Cease. So I like their starting pitching. Their lineup is still pretty good. I think Mike Schilt will clean up that club. And I think they will compete in the NL West. And I think San Diego is going to be a wild card team in the National League. Those are my two big things that I'm watching. And I'll give you a third thing. It's not that big because last year they only finished out of the playoffs by a heartbeat on the last weekend of the season in that three-pack in the AL West. I'm picking Seattle to win the AL West over the world champs, the defending world champs, and over the Astros. I'm picking Seattle against the two Texas teams to win the AL West because I love their pitching. How about you, young man?
It's really, is this for real in Los Angeles? Is all this talent that they brought in and signed going to make them the 1998 Yankees, the 1927 Yankees, et cetera? Or is it going to be a team that we can jokingly root for there? I mean, where I will be, but actually seeing the demise, the fall, squeaking their way by, similar to what the Padres did last season where, oh, this was it, all the stars, and it just never came to fruition. It's going to be interesting to see how it turns out, although really it's not going to matter until the postseason, which is where we saw some great upsets happen. People, of course, screaming at the clouds. We can't let them get away with these three-game series, and they're ruining the sport, and the best teams aren't making it easy. Thrilling postseasons. I'm not going to mind it. And what I'll be watching monetarily-wise, because I was dying for a full-season bet of futures, we're on under 11.5 three home run games this season.
Leave it to you.
Three home run games we don't want to see.
Under 11.5.
11.5. So if there's a dozen, three home run by one player games, we're in a lot of trouble.
Give me your World Series prediction.
Yankees, Dodgers. Let's take it back to when they were in Brooklyn, baby.
I am going to give you what is probably a pretty chalk selection. Braves, Orioles.
Yeah. If I were to make one for real, I mean, that's the one that if I had a lean toward, it would either be, how do you say no to Houston? So a Houston-Orioles battle to get to the World Series. And then, hey, why not the Braves? And for a lot of people out here in the Northeast, obviously, why not the Braves and Phillies? See who gets to the last dance.
And folks, if you're within the sound of our voice somehow, some way, turn on this Houston-North Carolina game, this Alabama-North Carolina game, because it is entertaining. 68-64, 8.5 to go, back and forth, back and forth. Carolina just went up by 6 after being down by a couple, after they were up 8. And just as fast as that happens, boom, it's 5. It's Alabama, or it's 3 as Alabama comes right back and hits a 3. 30 to go. We might get to 100.
Under 175 is not looking great.
70-67 with 8 and change.
If you're listening to this after we've recorded, you're most likely listening to this on Friday. Get a nap in. Duke Houston, 9:39 at the earliest Eastern time. Creighton, Tennessee, 10:09. What are we doing, Al, with these it's games ending at midnight?
A Christopher Mad Dog Russo special.
And we're playing the L.A. games before the games on the East Coast. What are we doing?
I took a gummy at 7 o'clock. Vodka tonic. You expect me to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and watch these games?
You can understand. Hey, you send teams out to the West. Of course the game's going to go longer because they're playing on Pacific time. They're starting the games before the East Coast.
I remember Steve Torrey is watching, but I'm sleeping. The doggy's sleeping.
People are trying to get a czar of the NCAA that's not Charlie Baker. They want a czar for college basketball, like a Coach K or a Roy Williams to figure out the sport. They want a czar for NIL in the transfer portal. Can we just get a designated czar across all our sports to figure out the schedules, please? Can we get KenPom on the horn to see if he's got another algorithm in his laptop he could throw our way? Just use some common sense, will you please? When the Mountain Time people are even pissed off, we've wronged everyone. Al, it's always a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.
Folks, from my partner, the great John Tiny Lund, I am Al Renato, a.k.a. Al from White Plains. Have a great sports weekend. Enjoy the rest of the Sweet 16 Elite Eight, and have a very, very happy Easter.
We'll be back 8 p.m. Eastern time here on Sports Radio America. You can listen at sportsradioamerica.com and interact with the show there as well, or find us on the TuneIn app by searching for Sports Radio America. You can also follow John Lund under the same handle on Twitter at London Bridge. Thanks again for listening.